Do you remember the definition of faith that we use? Faith is the ability to put your foot down where nothing is, and in the act of putting it down, posit something to put it on. Do you accept our definition of faith?
Yes.
Why do we make this statement? I'm going to open one of the I had a sumptuous gift of 12 plus pens of different colours. Is that right?
At the moment.
I'm just testing. Can you see that red? Can you see that red? Can you see that red? Well, the one you can't see was in my mind, wasn't it? Did I put it there, or did I pretend? Can you see that one? That one I didn't touch the film. Right. Now, imagine that this sheet of cello represents pre-creational intelligent power. It is infinitely extended intelligent power. We can call it SP, sentient power, infinitely extended, not yet having contracted. Contracted means contracted, acted against itself. It is infinite. The moon, the red and the blue appears. The red symbolizes energy active and the blue energy intellective. The intellective is inhibited. It finites. Now imagine between the red and the blue there is that which can appear as either an infinitely extended sentient power not yet having manifest either as power or as form. Form is intellective. Power is volitional. Now, from within itself, it posits. I am thinking of a point there which I will put, but I have not yet put it. Now, potential means power held. Power held. That's another way of saying power inhibited. Power tends to posit. If you inhibit your tendency to posit, that's like you inhibiting your tendency to propound a problem. You have to work very hard to inhibit a tendency to posit something. Why? Because when there is nothing whatever there, other than infinite sentient power, there is an opportunity not being used. Imagine prior to creation there is an infinity of sentient power not in use. Alright? Right. Now I have in my mind an idea of a point. Have you all got an idea of a point in your mind? And if not, will you put one there? How do you do it? Imagination. The word imagination is the noun form of a power I make, imag. I, the observer, can actually focus. Focus means force strike. Focus. Force strike. Now, somewhere around there, I have decided to put a point. Will you agree with me that that is a sufficient place to put it? We can put it there, or there, or there, or anywhere, whatever. I can put it in midair. But in midair, it doesn't leave a mark on the cellophane. I'm going to put it on the cellophane, but prior to going on the cellophane, it is in my mind. It is in your mind too. And we agree that I will be your servant in positing this point on here. Now imagine that whatever is can never cease to be, and whatever is not can never come to be. And that means that whatever we are as spiritual monads, as prime units of initiative power, that is spirit, spirit means initiative, we can all agree to make a point. And when you give me the instruction, tell me to make a point, and I will accept the instruction for you and make the point. Shall I make a point? Right. Here is the point. I hope it's good enough for you. There is a point. The red point, symbolizing energy positing itself from within itself, because we are only instruments of the sentient power of infinity, which we call God. God is a shorthand word for infinite sentient power. And it has made, with myself as the servant of you, as a multitudinous group of sentient powers, there a point. Now, there was no point there. Then there was a point in our mind. Out of all the things we posited, we could have posited not a point, but a line, or a plane, or a cube, a triangle, a square, anything. But we chose a point. Why? Because the point is most economic. Point is po in t. That means power in crucifixion. Because when power posits itself and fixates itself, power is self-crucified. This is the mystery of the crucifixion of all witnesses to truth. To witness to truth is to pin oneself, to nail, fixate, crucify oneself in the image, in the mind, posited on the cellophane. Now it was not there, and now it is there. Where there was no point, we posited the point in the mind and then sent a message down this arm to the pen to make the point. The point now exists. Exists means stands out. Before it was hidden. Now it is standing out visibly from the background. That is a primary point. The phonetic for that primary point is K-T-R. K is a lock, T is the crossing of the forces that make it. Why? Because I have to say to the right, to the left, above, below, coordinates to fixate the point. So there are crossing forces locked. T, K, K, T. But the moment I posit that point, the letter R, which is a vibration, and which means, as in Roch, spirit, differentiation. The moment the point is there, we differentiate the place where the point is from the rest of the cellophane where it is not. So where nothing was, we have posited something on which we can put our foot. Foot itself means power, fixated. It's the same word as put, etymologically, and the same as the part in pater, father. The power that posits that point is called father. The power that posits the point is called father. The point that is posited is a form and is called the son. In both spellings, it is the father appearing on a stage lower, that is, in manifestation. It is also an illuminator of consciousness because it makes clear for us the meaning of that word we have chosen to call point. So we now have a point where there was no point. Now, we have to think the totality of the whole manifest universe is built of points. Science calls it energy quanta. Little amounts of energy. But each little amount is a point. And the universe is nothing but powers posited. Little quantities of energy posited by acts of primary sentient power. And there we are. If we were to cover this with dots and then connect the dots up with lines, we could draw all conceivable forms of universal manifestation. Now, are we clear about that? Now, the word faith and the word foot and put and part in pater means faith. Faith is putting power. Where nothing is, you preconceive and then put. You place, that is P, and you nail or fixate or cross, that is T. P for the positing power, T for the nailing, fixation power. So there is the P, the point, and I've drawn now the cross, the coordinates that help to locate it. Now, when this point is posited, is it not true that to posit it, we have to take in the infinity of our mental possibilities the idea of point out of all possibilities and select point to put it there? Therefore, all around here there are an infinity of other things that we might have put instead of point. We might have had triangle, square, so on. We might have had compasses. We might have had square in that sense. And we could cover all the space with all conceivable forms. But we didn't do that. That's relatively waterproof. Somebody's going to clean it later with something, I suppose. If not, I will do it personally. Now, throughout the whole of infinite space, there is sentient power. There is no absolute voidity. There is nowhere where there is not sentient power. And it is that sentient power, by self-focus, self-striking of its own power, that posits form. And whatever form it posits, clearly, it has excluded all alternative forms that it might have posited. So we inhibit, we hold in potential all the other forms that would cause us not to be able to see the point. So every act of clear vision is necessarily an act of inhibition of all the other things that we might clearly have put instead. And when we put all the things that are possible to put, for us as finite physical beings, it takes infinite time. So we won't bother to do it. But if we did, we could cover this and then buy a bigger sheet and cover that and so on with alternative forms. And when we have covered them all together, so that every point contains every other point, so that within that little point there is a square and a circle and a triangle and so on, that point is the very principle of all forms, whatever. And therefore, we have to say, if we cover the whole sheet with total possibilities, then we need a term to express the totality of all the mutually inhibiting forms. The name for that is chaos. Now, chaos is not rubbish, it's not total disorder. It is the simultaneous co-presentation of all conceivable orders. So out of chaos we can draw order. Are you with us, Peter?
Yeah, I was thinking about the screen motion between point to point. As you said, the non-economical way is to say, place a point and say we move from point to point, and therefore we can create triangles, squares, or whatever.
Yes.
Now, what happens, well, what is happening when you are particularizing the shape? And when you are chaotic, when you are going from point to point indiscriminately, and or working in a geometric pattern with order in your life, what is the?
Do you mean how do you do it?
Is there a law that governs it?
The law is that which you posit. Law is from the same verb as to lay. A law is what is laid down as a pattern for action. No. Chaos is the term we reserve for the totality of all conceivables presented simultaneously.
Mass black.
Or in this case, mass red. Or whatever colour arbitrarily we care to posit. In color symbology, in Kabbalah, and so on, in all the great religious works, there is a very full color symbology, and you take mass white for ultimate enlightenment, mass black for ultimate wickedness, the opposite to mass enlightenment, mass blue for intellectuality, mass green for hope, and so on. There's a colour symbology in all major religions. In the church they would use different vestments for different times of the year, different altar cloths for different times of the year, and so on, all according to colour symbology. Now, let's just write the word colour for a moment. That's the same word with the same origin as the word for a tube in your stomach called colon. Yeah? If we add an R to it, which means to differentiate, then we have the fundamental concept of the prism. A primordial mass of white, when pushed through impedances, becomes rainbow. Colour appears through impeding original white light. Right? Now we, as human beings, have a gift from our source to be able to think, to be able to reason, to be intellectual, to employ verbal symbols to aid our thought. And we talk about coloration as emotive stress. We talk about a colored image, meaning emotionally charged, don't we? Highly colored conversation, and so on. The call, then, notice, you can put a K there, it's quite legitimate. In fact, in some languages, it's spelled color with a K. In English, you can use either S or K sound for the letter written C. Now, if you reverse that, read it, Eureka, it is lock. The other way it's Eureka too, as in call, Nide. But this way it is lock, because your food tube is a lock, like a canal, for a throughput of experiences to be differentiated. When you eat, you are supposed to chew, to break down the food, to differentiate it, to discriminate its parts, and then to assimilate to different organs the particular chemistry needed by each organ. And that is a colour phenomenon. Now, the subject matter you gave me the idea for when you were explaining the problem of faith, I will now bring into consciousness, it is this. Hindu religion is concerned more with eternity than with time. Similarly with other Oriental religions generally. But three religions came out of the Arabian desert from the same source. And they are not concerned so much with eternity as the end process, the omega, the big O, the final goal, as the historical process of getting there. So we say Judaism, Christianity, Islam are three historical religions. They are concerned with the march of time, evolution and development in a way that Hindu religion is not. Far Eastern religion is more concerned with the repetition of eternity. Now you remember eternity we translate Hey Trinity. And the letter E, fifth letter, the He of the Hebrew, the letter E means itself life. Life, Trinity, is the translation eternity. The Trinity is power, form, function. A threefold activity of sentient power, not serially presented, but presented simultaneously. In time, we see things sequentially, serially, one after the other. And in that seeing, we abstract each thing that we see from its context of primordial chaos. That is, from eternity. Eternity is all presented simultaneously. Time is the same, presented sequentially, serially, bit by bit. Right. Now, why did these three religions stress historicity? If we take the Hindu idea of an eternal recurrence of manifestation, rest, manifestation, rest, manifestation, rest, a period of creation, a period of rest, another period of creation, another of rest. Now, as taught, this can have a very peculiar effect on the human psyche. it can actually produce colossal boredom. And by about the 6th century BC, there was a terrific revolt. And prior to the Christian dispensation, this boredom had got to such a pitch that the rulers of the world were really getting fed up with the idea of an eternal recurrence of identical events. Nietzsche borrowed the idea and brought it up to date in the last century under the term of the eternal recurrence, in which you do everything that you've done before again. Everything whatever that we could possibly do has been done an infinite number of times before and will be done an infinite number of times again. No, I would say it was locking itself up in a repetitive structure called law, rota, tora. The idea of this eternal creation, dissolution, recreation of the same, dissolution, recreation of the same, is a very boring idea. Would you like to come here again forever and repeat your statement at the beginning of this evening? And hear me repeat the same words again and again and again forever. And horribly remember you'd already done it an infinity of times before. Surely with that concept there must arise at some point a revolt. Something must say, I dislike intensely this repetition. And I want to make everything new. So there in the Bible is a statement, behold, I make all things new. Just when you thought everything was going to be repeated, I've changed it. New rules, new heaven, that means new ideas. A new earth, that means new applications. And which would you rather have, eternal boredom or eternal creative production of newnesses? Or are you afraid of being bored by the eternal newnesses? Now, these historical religions all tell that there is an ultimate term to the evolutionary process. That we're not going to repeat exactly. We're moving from a state of relative unconsciousness to a state of total consciousness and complete individual self-determination. The cosmic law is not going to rule us. We are going to discover the law, to uncover its tricks, to assimilate it, and then to recreate our own being from this knowledge and understanding. Now these three religions teach that there is a process going on in man. The man is in a kind of test situation on earth, and in it he can choose and will choose, and in the act of choosing he will create for himself a new character. This is called a new birth. To do this, there must be a change of mind, a metanoia. There must be a total change of outlook. One suddenly recognizes one has repeated too often one's silly responses to environmental stimuli with other people and with situations. And one is determined now to make a new response in a totally new way to a situation that could remain the same if we did not change it. I am Alpha and Omega. I am the original divine voice. Alpha means divine voice. It is God speaking. Prior to creation, it is Alpha. Creation begins when the letter Beta, or Beta, B begins. B originally is drawn as a circle. When that circle appears, that is the beginning of formal manifestation. Prior to that, there is an A. I will draw an A. I imagine that that A actually is a convenient shorthand form. Otherwise, I would have to extend that like that, like that, and like that, and like that, and like that, to infinity. Now, you see, if I do that, what have I got? I've got a triangle there. Yeah? In that triangle, I'm going to write power, form, action. power, form, action. And this triangle is a precipitate inwardly of the infinite sentient power produced by these coordinates. It is the Father, the Pater, the Filius, the Son, and the activation for the Holy Spirit at work. And that triangle has been produced by coordination lines of infinite length. And I'm going to draw the triangle again without those lines to remind us. When they have the triangle up in the Vatican, it is to remind them to think at all times in terms of power, form, function. In every situation, in life, in business, in politics, in art, in human relations, it's always a problem of a definite amount of power in a definite formulation and a definite activation of that formulated power. If we handle the PFA of the situation, then we have got exactly the beautiful act, the true act of living. But if we don't balance those three, we are in trouble. If we have more power than form, we're leaking. If we have more form than power, we are rigid. If we have activity with no power and no form, we have slush. So PFA must be balanced for the perfect act. Now, this perfect act cannot come immediately. Spirit always acts indirectly. If spirit were to posit immediately itself, it would posit the same that it was before creation. Can you see that? Let's go back a bit. Before creation, the point was not there. But what was there was eternal, infinite spirit. Sentient power, initiative was there. And he had not yet initiated, but could do, anything whatever. But if it were to initiate its self-appearance, simultaneously, it would reposit itself like the empty piece of cellophane. The Godhead would be the Godhead again, and the Godhead, and the Godhead. And there would be no God as Father, God as Son, issuance of Father power, God as Holy Spirit, activating power, form, but everything that reposits itself as light, infinite. Imagine an infinite light with no form in it, positing itself in its fullness of light. What's it posited? Answer, no change. It has not manifested itself. Manifest means counted, individually, fastened, made fast in order to be evaluated, manifest. Right? So, spirit, if it were to act directly, would only posit infinity again. And there would be no manifestation, no world that we know. There'd be no manifestation of separative power, form, function, but just simultaneously infinity, 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 with an absolute blast of light. That light in Kabbalah is called nothing. It's called Ayn. It's called the invisible, never presented observer. Well, then it's not telling us anything, is it? But it could do. But it can only manifest at the expense of creation. And creation is arcing. Remember, created from that base, K-R-A, Kra. Read Hebraica, arc. And the arc is nothing but the circle. Creation is arcing. The moment it creates, it's finite. It makes a zone of finitude. And that finitude is manifest, can be counted. There's one, and here's another for you. And there's a little one inside there. And there's another inside there. Right? The great drawing of God with the compasses. Yes, simply a circle excludes infinity and includes finitude. Right, so now we have to say, what is the purpose of the historical presentation of this infinite power which could present itself wholly itself, repeatedly, eternally. But if it did, it would be no change. It would be infinite, intelligent, light power, publishing itself as infinite, intelligent, light power, without any finiting process. No change. Now, no finite being would then exist. There would be no education. There would be no understanding. There would be no creatures to understand. But the moment we make that arc, we make a circle, we make it finite. Now we'll draw a touch circle again. Now that is the word on, as a primitive glyph. I'll write it as O, N. But really the letter N itself means to negate continuously. Out of all conceivable powers and applications, N says no to the infinite. And in saying no to infinity, it says yes to finity. Now we've got a zone there, a circle, and that is a drawing, that's the Ouroboros, serpent with tail in mouth, very primitive symbol of God, a self-stimulating, self-precipitating intelligent power. There it is. Now, once it has put its tail in its mouth, it has excluded, that's out there, and included sentient power. That outside is expanded, and this inside is inspanded. When you stretch your hand, that's called a span. And it means a motion of primordial life power. Within this circle here, now, there are possibilities of further pulsatings. So we go in to the center and out again. And we can do this repeatedly until we fill the whole of this space. But we leave the middle there empty because the power cannot stop moving. It can move towards the center and then out, but it can't go to dead center and stop. So it draws this shape here. And it keeps on doing this in cycles of inner perience. Experience would be outside. Inperience is self-examination of the sentient power enclosed in this circle. Now each one of us is such a circle. Each one of us is fittingly diagrammed in this way. In the very middle there, I'm going to write IS, which means yes. I'll draw it a bit bigger for you. In the middle is IS. That's the sense of I, subject. I, the knower. Outside here, spinning round it like this, is the issuance of the I initiates, and what comes out there is seen as object. So the whole of this zone here, we call the action zone, and it cannot go into the dead center. But it is subjected to the orders from center, and if there be two such beings, touching continually, like that, they can interfere with each other and stop each other's focus on center. So that if the intelligent center of this being goes out to look at the other being, it can become conditioned by the stimulus received from the other being and then forget its own center and fall into external identification with the received stimulus. And that is called the fall. The idea of the fall in all religions is the idea of being fixated on the periphery of being to the point of forgetting one's centrality of initiative.
The fact that you fall onto that other center, does that mean that is a more powerful polarity?
No. It means you have become interested in the external stimulus. And you don't fall onto the center of the other being, you fall onto your own periphery. Yes. Now that peripheralization of awareness results in identification with the external world, called the material world, and the fascinating, that is, binding of consciousness to the external stimulus situation, so that you're tied up, not by the other being, but by your own interest in the stimulus. The fall is really a downgoing of an interested power, identifying with the stimulus rather than going to its own center, which is creative. The whole meaning of the fall in religion is abandoning one's center of initiative and peripheralizing one's awareness by becoming interested more in what another being is expressing than what you might creatively express. Now, every time we examine a thing, we go around it and we bring back the stimulus energy to center to examine it. But we're not very good at it, really. We don't pay full attention. Supposing somebody generously gives you a new Rolls Royce, and you pat it and stroke it and lift the bonnet up and measure the tires and the tread and count the cylinders and so on, usually you get tired after a bit and have to go to bed for a rest. You cannot exhaust the full interest of any single thing given to you, no matter how small, because everything is precipitated by the infinite, and the most finite, the most small thing we have has an infinity of implications in it, and we haven't time to exhaust it. So what we do is we go round, go back, think about it, and fall asleep. And then we wake up again and go out and we examine something else. And we never really exhaust the significance of any single experience, whether it's a relatively simple experience like buying a bun or getting married. You tend not to exhaust before you pass on to your next experience. Now, supposing we said, let's simplify it a bit further. We make a circle like that. That circle has come from the infinite and made the number six. It's come from infinity, eternity, into time. It then goes further, investigates the circle, goes out and investigates another circle, goes out, like some fellow goes to the theater, comes out, goes, has a drink, comes out, goes home, has a sleep, comes out, goes to business in the morning. Now, how many of us actually sit down and try to coordinate these activities? How many of us actually say, I've been to the theater tonight? What is the exact correspondence in that and going to the American bar in the Midlands? What is the exact correspondence with that in all its elements, all its parts, with being married, with going to business? Do we put everything into correspondence? Do we? Do we actually? Is this a new idea? Or is it an idea we've had and never accomplished? It's a very old yogic exercise. When you go to bed at night, remember the whole of your day backwards, starting in bed and thinking backwards right through the day. Most of the people I know that have tried it have fallen asleep and not known at what point they fell asleep or how far they got through their day.
When you do that exercise, do you in fact go backwards in time, step by step, even if you walk backwards? Or do you move backwards to an instant and then move forward and then move back again and move forward? Back again and move forward? Or continue to back?
When we said that time is a linear, sequential, serial presentation of the contents of eternity. But eternity is not time. Now, when you go into a deep dreamless sleep, you go into eternity. And that's why you can't remember it in time afterwards, because the mode of consciousness called temporal is linear, and the mode of awareness eternal is not linear. But between the waking temporal state, where you think you're conscious of what you're doing, and the state of deep sleep where you're actually eternally, infinitely aware, you have a mediating state called dreaming. Now in dreaming you can go in any direction whatever. forwards, backwards, upside, downside, inside, outside, and generally at random.
So is it in that twilight state?
Yes.
You can bring in that non-serial approach to implement
the measuring thing? Yes. The twilight state, two lights, where sunset or dawn is easier to practice that exercise than at any other time. By practice, you can actually make yourself start to dream and remain awake. And you can then examine the contents of eternity in time. If you have the power to remember what it is you're looking for. And that requires tremendous practice. Now, every time we go round, we assimilate a bit of an experience and then come out to another experience. So in fact, we do not exhaust any particular one. And so we have to keep going round like this. And we always get a gap, no matter how often we go round like this. Extroverting attention, introverting, extroverting, introverting, extroverting, introverting, and so on. You see, gradually we're filling up this space with the lines, the world lines of our investigation. But we've always got some more that we can go into here. We can gradually reduce the area between like this as we go. And until we have exhausted all conceivable possibilities of our own self-investigation, it is not called the consummation of days. And it is not yet the last judgment. Every time you go out, there is a judgment. When you come back, there is a judgment. When you go out, you judge the world, the lamps, the ceiling, the floor. When you come in, you judge your mental state and response to it. Outside are events. Inside are states of feeling, of emotion, of impulse. Until you have filled in the whole space and left nothing whatever unexamined, it is not yet the last judgment for that individual.
So when you go into the environment, you look at and say, the last judgment seems to be a day where we will all be there and we will all be judged on what we've done in our
mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you're judged individually at different times and you're judged eternally and collectively as well. All beings are being evaluated in their experiences while they're undergoing them. And also there is a final judgment which actually preceded your appearance in time. Because remember, your potentiality before you enter birth is there in its totality. Yes. Totally different than the ones you think you've got now. None of the problems which you now think are problems will then be of any interest, because you will have transcended them for higher ones. But the final one is this: I am self-responsible. That's the last judgment. Before that time, you blame everybody else for your condition, for your misfortune. At the last judgment, you blame you.
When Christ
and the prophets, they know
not what they do.
Yes, that's pretty obvious.
He was then taking full responsibility for himself. But at the same time, he said, God, why has
thou forsaken them? We've had this one before. If your memory is any good, we've dealt with this before.
Yeah,
he, in order to be what he was, the firstborn of the dead, the firstborn of many brothers, the leader of human evolution, who attains a state of total last judgment with himself first, and then said, I will now draw you a picture of the last judgment. There's my halo, and here is my body. That's my last judgment. I have a zone of influence, I am active, the vertical, and I am passive to my own activity. That's the horizontal. That's the diagram of us, each one of us. We are a zone of sentient power, positively active, negatively passive to our own positivity. We lay our life down and we pay the price. We make decisions, most of them stupid, and then we have to deal with them. Pure point. Now that symbol is a very, very ancient symbol, long before historical Christianity, but not before cosmic logos. Cosmic logos is that symbol. I am power, I am initiative, I am the recipient of my initiative. That is the meaning of that symbol. That's why that symbol is placed like a wheel behind the heads of saints. A saint is a person who has realized he is S-A-N-T, self-observing, crucified one. A saint is a person that knows he is the cause of his own condition and affirms it and accepts it. Now, at the last judgment for the individual, that can occur in time when a man or a woman suddenly realizes, my God, I am responsible for me. I can't blame anybody. It is my reaction to the stimulus, to the event, to the circumstance. Not the event, but my response is my business. That's the last judgment. But the whole human race also has a cumulative last judgment. And the whole universe of manifestation has a last judgment too. Providing you accepted that you were the cause of your being slow.
Yeah.
Not if you said I was slow because somebody made me slow.
No, if you said that would be hell.
Well, a very nice lady said to me today that she made a bit of a mistake, but it wasn't her fault because the man had told her. But her response was her response. We have to accept total responsibility. Until we do, we have not reached last judgment for us. But when we do, that is the last judgment. We have nobody to blame but ourselves. When we realize this and we stop blaming other people for our condition, we've had the last judgment. After that, we are freely, creatively beings of initiative. We're not inert, we're not dead. Dead means unable to change ourselves. We are able to create ourselves anew every instant. Now, these three religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, are arranged by many thinkers in this way. The Old Testament, so-called, deals with God the Father. The New Testament deals with God the Son. And the Islamic Testament deals with the Holy Ghost. God the Father posits the world. God the Son redeems the world as a whole. And Islam says, and every individual within it has the Holy Spirit within the individual, not just within the collective. So it's in Islam, everybody is equal before God, absolutely. In principle, not necessarily in practice, but in principle, every Muslim is equal to every other Muslim. There are no highs and lows in the eyes of God. Now in some Christian sects, there may be high and low in the hierarchy of the church, but not before God. And Dionysius of Ares Hill said the hierarchy is not the persons of the church, but the order of development of the awareness of the structure of reality. Judaism has said there is a God, there is intelligent power, concerned for the historical evolution and development of the human race, and determined to turn every human being into a God functioning for the God. Christianity says, yes, and I have done the work, says Jesus. It can be done. I have done it. I prove it. I insult the establishment and get crucified. And I don't complain. And I will do it again. And I will come back and do it again. Until everyone knows how to do it. And in those days, none shall teach another of God, for all shall know him, because he is what is inside there. The initiating spirit in the center of every being. Now history is moving towards a condition where the whole human race is being brought into consciousness of their total self-responsibility. I saw a newsreel the other night of a 12-mile long line of corpses in Germany on the road. Living people lying down and saying, this is how we will be when we are dead. We are being treated as not here in the middle of a military exercise. So they took their initiative and they lay down on the road, 12 miles long of them. And that was their initiative. They said, we don't like this nuclear destruction of the human race. That's their verdict. They're making a definite stand. We don't want to destroy everything. But there are other forces on earth that say, we don't mind destroying everybody except us. And we have our shelters. And we're more intelligent than most. So we ought to be saved. Because this final judgment, called Armageddon, that means the judgment of Earth's arms. The testing of the Earth fight, what we call the nuclear holocaust, is nothing but the natural, logical product of the condition of man. The men are not fond of each other. That the human race are not kindly disposed. That they are quite content to be cut into groups, into individuals, into nations, into political parties. And they are quite content to blow the other side up in the name of their own survival. Now, as long as human beings are prepared to blow up other human beings for their own survival, then there's going to be a movement towards the Armageddon, the final test of physical violence on earth. Now that's preceded by a war in heaven. Remember heaven, the uplifted, the heaved up. Heaven is the idea world, the world of your ideas. The battle is a battle of concepts. Say materialistic Marxism believes that you are a machine that can be manipulated, destroyed, brainwashed, sent to Siberia, and so on. It's an idea in the mind of a group of people that all people can be manipulated. Wills can be changed with electric shocks. And there's another thought on earth in some other people, that human beings are fundamentally, internally divine. One part of the world is grossly materialistic and violently disposed, and the other part says no. We are spiritually disposed. And we do not believe that external attack and violence and brainwashing techniques can fundamentally alter our spiritual determination to be free individuals. This is an ideological battle. It is called war in heaven. And the war in heaven precedes the war on earth. You can see that in all the news every day. An ideological statement from two sides of the Iron Curtain. As long as people have this war within their mind, that war will move towards expressing itself in physical activity. Physical violence is merely the external expression of mental violence. And every day you know enough people who go about cursing each other quietly in business and wishing each other no good in daily life. And just mentally. But tighten up the situation a bit and mental becomes emotional and emotional becomes physically active. Now historically we are moving not towards a repetition of an identical situation as manifestation rest. We are moving towards a peak of self-realization, of self-responsibility. Each individual totally self-responsible. And we've been pushed to towards it by cosmic evolutionary power, which we call God. We know we've got to face this situation. We're not going to stop the powers on Earth that prefer physical violence to intelligent solutions. We're not going to stop miners beating policemen or policemen beating miners in picketing fights. They've got to stop it from the inside. And until that is stopped in everyone, there is a movement towards that Armageddon, which no individual can stop outside himself. He can stop it inside, but not outside. So it's our duty to each one of us as an individual to solve the internal problem of the Armageddon in us as individuals. If we can't solve it in the individual, in us, simple proposition, God so loved the world. He gives himself incarnate as his own son, as his own spirit, into the human race and says, love one another as I have loved you. Now, until we can do that, we're moving step by step towards nuclear blast-off. It isn't a matter of whether we like it or not. It's a matter of fact. How much power has an average citizen got against his government in any country in the world? Where would you begin? He's got nothing except a voice of complaint and chanting on the back of the neck. But if he changes himself internally and solves the problem of that Armageddon in himself, well, then he won't be in that position. When it finally occurs, because it must occur, because human beings are not trying to make it not occur. But the few who do see it, they will not be in that position when it occurs. Symbolically in the Bible, you have a number. 144,000 will be saved. That's not many, if you take that number literally. But 144 is 12 times 12, isn't it? 10 means ordinary perfection. 12 means governmental perfection. Now, 12 times 12 means governmental perfection refined, so that even the details are covered. Ordinary perfection is 10, sufficient is 100, 1,000 is plenty. 144,000 means that the impulses inside every individual within the nervous system are so clustered together that in every individual who has that number, there is total self-control and transcendence of the need for a personal Armageddon. Well, you can juggle all night if you wish with your numbers. The symbology is perfectly plain. We need ordinal perfection, and we need governmental perfection, and we need it to find details, and that is the meaning of 144,000. It's not 144,000 human individuals or 144,000 nerve endings in your body, but it is that number needed for control of self, so that one does not have this vicious, aggressive, counter-reactive process. Yes.
Presumably, though, that unification is brought about by living out one's days, in the sense that you cannot do it before you could do it. You want self-fulfillment, and therefore the days are no more judgment. Don't they presuppose a preparedness to suffer sufficiently to gain that unity?
Yes, but this is within the power of any individual to prepare to accelerate his development.
So, yes, right.
I often get this statement made, I can't do it before I do it. And it means I don't want to.
But there is a difference between accelerating one's own development and egotistically cutting corners.
Very great difference. Accelerating one's own development is always towards that. Every moment that you say, I am a zone of sentient power, I have an active aspect whereby I initiate, and a passive aspect where I suffer the consequences of my initiation. Every time you say that and mean it and understand it, you accelerate. Every time you forget it, you retard. And you can lose your gains. And there's that horrible, very frightening statement in the Revelation. Let him that is filthy be filthy still. That is, on the day that the whistle blows and they say, missiles have just left Moscow, you have 35 seconds to put your back door over your bed and hide under it. And you might be busy being naughty. So it says, if you are being naughty, then be naughty still. You can't suddenly say, oh my God, if only I'd known I would have reformed 10 seconds ago, I would, honest Lord. We're in a very, very delicate position. And today, more than at any other time in history, the battles of the great heroes in India, in China, in Japan, in the North sagas, they're nothing compared to what we're threatened with today. We're threatened with a permanent blasting of the earth's fruitfulness, the pollution of its rivers, its earth, everything, for thousands of years, so that all life will perish, except for the insects that have dug in deep enough beforehand. The scorpion. It's a very serious moment. And we tend to think it isn't really serious. But we have a little article that says that the nuclear shelters of the royal family are now well assured. There are many caves fitted up in Wales, like factories. There are many more all over the world. For those that are wealthy enough and have enough initiative to have accepted the idea of that Holocaust, that nuclear war, and they've already put their baked beans down below. I know a man, and it's now, I think, about 12 years since I had a cup of tea with him, and I couldn't get in the house without squeezing between the bean cans. True. He asked me to go and see his library. Mama's collection of wonderful books on comparative religion, philosophy, yoga, everything. Open the front door, he could just let me round the door, and there were beans. And down the centre of the hall, enough room for us to go sideways. I said, what about the library? And he said, sorry, it's full of beans. We'll have to wait till we've eaten a few. He's prepared. Now, I know a lot of people that are prepared to shoot him the day there's shortage of beans. True. Because, do you know what he did, that man? He's very, very foolish. He actually went to the local greengrocers and the local grocers and the local everything and ordered everything he needed and said, shh. Don't tell anybody. You know, if you go to the corner shop and tell them your most private secret, it's all over immediately, isn't it? Well, he went and he told everybody in the shops, these beans are for the Armageddon. So where are they going for beans when they're sold out in the shops? To give the beans? That's not what he's studying them for. It's funny because he personally is very thin. If he stays that thin, his beans are going to last him an awful long time. And this is a very real situation, and the nearer it gets to it, the more hysterically amused by it people become. Why can't people take it seriously that we're going to be fried by the million? Do you know why? Fundamentally, we don't believe in death. We don't believe in death. Fundamentally, it's an unassimilable idea. You can have a body and destroy it, but have you destroyed fundamental sentient power? No. And therefore we tend not to take it seriously. But our own development we must take seriously.